Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome George Westerman and Richard Hunter to the broadcast. Together, they are the authors of The Real Business of IT, How CIOs Create and Communicate Value, published in 2009 by Harvard Business Press, which is the topic of our conversation today. George Westerman is a research scientist in MIT's Center for Digital Business. His research and teaching focuses on how executives can create value by bridging the IT business gaps. Richard Hunter is Vice President and Research Director in Gartner Research, where his recent work is focused on matters of interest to CIOs as well. He's also a world-class harmonica player who continues to compose and perform, and is the author of the world's best-selling Method for Jazz and Rock Harmonica Players. George and Richard also previously co-authored IT Risk, Turning Business Threats into Competitive Advantage, published by Harvard Business Press in 2006. I recently caught up with George and Richard by phone, and our conversation about the real value of IT focused primarily on world-class IT Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we spoke about the need for IT executives to communicate the value that they are delivering in business terms, the so-called value traps that many IT executives fall into, their virtuous cycle of IT value, the qualities that successful CIOs of the future will possess, as well as several other topics. Well, Richard Hunter and George Westerman, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. In your book, The Real Business of IT, which is a fantastic book, congratulations to both of you on that, you argue that as a percentage of capital spending within corporations, that budget's growing. It's in fact crossed the 50% mark. And business executives believe that there's a cost problem in many cases as a result of that. Furthermore, though, you indicate that the key to solving this isn't necessarily better governance, as a lot of organizations have pushed for, but rather, more importantly, better communication. And Richard, I'd like to start with you, if I may. What steps have you seen successful CIOs take in order to begin this journey where communication flow from IT or the business has been lacking? What are some of the first steps you would recommend an IT executive take in order to do this?
Well, first, let me note that governance is in part a communication mechanism, and we shouldn't discount the importance of governance as a means for the enterprise to execute oversight over the IT function, which I know George will agree is incredibly important in terms of creating and communicating value. But in our book, The Real Business of IT, we describe three steps on the path to value. The first step is about changing the way you think. And by that, we mean training yourself and the IT organization to express what you're doing in terms of the outcomes it produces for the enterprise. Outcomes described in terms of business performance, operationally and financially. That's the first step. It's a non-trivial step. It is easy to say, change the way you think. It is not easy to change the way you think. The second step is to show value for money, meaning that the IT organization demonstrates through tools such as benchmarking and through thinking through the outcomes that it supports with its services, that the IT organization is providing the right services to assure enterprise performance at the right level of quality to achieve the desired enterprise outcomes and at a competitive price. Value for money isn't the final step on the path to communicating value. But until you've demonstrated value for money, it's really tough to get into a discussion about anything else. The last step on the path to creating and communicating value is about the virtuous cycle of investment in change supported by IT. And here, IT is positioned as a component of the investment in change, an investment, by the way, that includes other scarce resources like executive time and attention, skilled business experts, and so on. And the outcomes here are described strictly in terms of enterprise performance, operational performance, and financial performance. Taken as a whole, these three steps transform the role of IT in the enterprise and the role that the IT professional plays as a member of the team that's focused on enterprise outcomes.
That's great. Well, part of the answer clearly appears to be that corporations should hire business-savvy IT executives, it appears anyway. George, in addition to representing IT in business terms, what role do you see IT executives having in educating business leaders about technology regarding trends, new technologies, competitors' use of technology, and so on?
You know, it's interesting. When we look at the studies of CIOs spending time on educating business executives on technology, we don't see any effect there. And I think the reason is that CIOs shouldn't be educating business executives on technology. CIOs should be educating business executives on how to use technology to change their business. And so we see effective CIOs doing two things in making the business more IT savvy. Number one is being really clear to everyone about what it means to make a good IT decision and a bad IT decision. And actually has very little to do with the technology and much more about the governance process. Richard mentioned it in the virtuous cycle a second ago. You know, every time we decide to make another copy of something for somebody's pet version of it, every time we've got four versions of the sales software instead of one, that means that we're creating additional risk because of the complexity. We're creating additional cost because of the complexity. And another huge aspect of risk, we're making it less agile. And so educating people that, you know, having that kind of a standardized and clean platform is so important. That's part of IT savvy that business people need to learn. Understanding that when we invest in projects, we're not investing because they're interesting to do. We're investing because there's a specific kind of value we're getting. And so we should be able to say what value we're going to get and how we're going to get it, and then go back and find out. That's another kind of IT savvy business executives need. Now, following up the progression that Richard talked about, as executives start to understand that part about what it means to use technology in a business, then you can have the conversations about, well, how can new technology maybe change the way the business is? So we wouldn't necessarily talk about cloud technology, but we might talk about the way the cloud would be used to transform what we're doing in IT or with business processes. We wouldn't necessarily talk about RFID technology. We would talk about the way that we can now use the information that we know about where items are to transform the way we manage a business process. You know, we don't talk about social computing. We talk about new ways to engage with customers. That's another kind of IT savvy, but once again, it's not about the technology. It's about how we can change the business now that we know good technology and how to apply it.
You know, I used to say that the central message of this book was, it's all about them. And that's not an ideal way to stay tonight, because it separates IT from everybody else. IT is us, everybody else is them. But it really is all about business performance. It's never about the technology. That's not what the value is. It's all about business performance. And everything that we've talked about today is about getting IT closer and closer to working on the same business performance issues that everybody else is working on.
A good example, and certainly some great nuances in both responses. In your book, The Real Business of IT, you describe value traps that IT leaders can get caught in and the best means of avoiding them. Richard, I wonder if I can ask you again, can you take a moment and describe some of the most significant value traps that you've seen and how to avoid them?
Well, let's talk first about what a value trap is. A value trap is a behavior that made sense at one time for IT professionals, but that no longer makes sense. In other words, it's a habit that has outlived its usefulness. The single most important value trap for IT organizations is focusing on the machines, is expressing the value of what IT does in terms of how well the machines are running, as opposed to expressing the value in terms of how much better everyone else in the enterprise is working because of what IT does. But in general, a lot of value traps are about habits of mind. IT professionals have certain habits of mind that send subtle messages to the rest of the organization that IT is a separate entity, that it's not really part of the business. For example, consider the subtexts that are at play when an IT professional talks about aligning IT with the business. When we say, my goal is to align IT with the business, we've said three things, and all of them have a dangerous implication for the IT professional. The first thing we've said is, there's something called the business, and there's something called IT, and they're not the same thing. The second subtext is, not only are this thing called the business and this thing called IT different things, they're not even moving in the same direction. The third subtext is a little more subtle, but also very damaging to the standing of the IT professional in the organization. And that is that no one else in the enterprise has a goal to align with anyone else. Everyone else in the enterprise has goals that are about revenues, margins, market share, customer satisfaction, customer retention. That's how the rest of the organization thinks of its work. That's how the rest of the organization thinks of value. When the IT executive says, my goal is to align IT with the business, every executive who hears that thinks immediately, that's not my goal. My goals have nothing to do with that. And that separates the IT professional from the rest of the organization in a very unhealthy way. And most of the value traps are about those kinds of almost unconscious ways of thinking about what IT does that separates IT from the goals and the aspirations of everyone else in the enterprise.
So, you know, it's interesting about these value traps. As Richard said, at one time they were useful. I would actually go one more step. Not only are they no longer useful, they're actually harmful. So, you know, it feels like when I'm trying to get myself out of a sand trap when I'm golfing, you know, I swing away, I just get deeper and deeper into the sand. That's how these things are. The more you talk about ways that you are separate from the business, the more it inculcates in their mind that you are separate. The more you talk about IT as being a cost of doing business, the more they manage you just like a cost of doing business, which is trying to drive that cost down. And so every step we take along the way where we think we're doing better, we're actually hurting ourselves, and that's how these value traps can be just so difficult to manage.
And the solution, I'll note, is for the IT professional to change the way he or she thinks. And that's easy to say, by the way. It's not easy to do. It takes focused effort. It takes concentration. It takes an awareness of what you're trying to achieve to change the habits of mind that represent value traps.
These are great points all the way around. And it brings to mind actually George's response earlier about the balance between tech savviness and business savvy or business acumen of the IT leader. I want to actually return to that, especially in light of this last response. The desire among business executives to have IT leaders who can explain their department's activities in business terms has led actually some companies to place business executives who've not grown up in IT as the leaders of those departments. I think of ADP and Mike Capone. I think of Harrah's Entertainment and Katrina Lane, people that came from the business side, one who ran a business, one who was a marketing executive, respectively. Richard, maybe I'll return to you again. What do you think of this trend, and are we reaching a period when a CIO need not be a true technologist?
I would say we are well into the period in which the CIO need not be an experienced technologist. We run, in Gartner Executive Programs, we run the world's largest survey of CIOs every year. It's called the CIO Agenda Survey. In 2009, we had over 1,500 respondents, which makes it the largest survey of CIOs in the world by a factor of about 3. A full 24% of the respondents to that survey are people whose first job in any IT organization is CIO. And I would say that this is indeed a reflection of the emerging truth that you don't need to be a technologist to know how to run an IT organization that delivers value. And I'll go beyond that. I'd say that it's an indication that executives who have no background in IT are beginning to think about the IT organization, about a tour of duty in IT, as something that they want on their resumes because it qualifies them for bigger and better things in a world in which IT is absolutely essential to running a business well.
We actually wrote a post on the HBR blog that was titled, Should Your Next Job Be CIO? And we're starting to believe it, whether it's Randy Spratt, McKesson, or other people who have gotten into this role not necessarily wanting the job, but turn out finding it's a tremendous way to learn about the way that the company works. What's powering the company, who knows who, what processes work. And that's tremendously valuable as you move on to additional roles in the company. So I don't know that people are going to believe us that their next job ought to be CIO, but those who end up in the role seem to find that it's a very useful place in their career.
I'd like to note that while executives who don't have experience in IT can be very effective CIOs, that doesn't necessarily mean that an executive with considerable expertise in technology can't be an effective CIO. It's all about how you think about the value that the IT organization is bringing to the business. It's all about how well you understand what the business is trying to achieve and how it's trying to achieve it, and about your ability to position IT as an enabler for those kinds of outcomes.
In many ways, making that communication happen is a little easier for a business executive who comes into IT than it is for an IT person to grow that knowledge, because the business person can always hire or find people to run the technology part of it. But that doesn't mean, as Richard said, CIOs can't do it. It's an extra step, and it means paying a lot of attention to what matters really to the business and to the business executives, and less what matters to the technology people.
And I'll note, just in passing, I'll note that whether the CIO comes from a technology background or not, you need some capable technologists on the IT team.
Yep. Good points all around. I moving on to a different topic. George, I wonder if I can address this to you. I also found the notion of the virtuous cycle of IT value to be compelling and something that is a theme that runs through the book. Could you take a moment and describe that?
You know, it's interesting. Several years back, my colleague Peter and I did some research with non-IT executives, and we asked them about 18 tasks, 10 IT tasks and 8 non-IT tasks. And we asked them about the value that they're getting from IT. And when we were in the statistics, it turned out that out of those 18 tasks, only 4 really mattered. And the most important of those was having transparent oversight, having the business people know what's happening in IT and how to get involved in IT. The four topics, though, we're at needs identification, transparent oversight, process and organization change, and then the application development solution delivery stuff. What we found was this idea of the transparent oversight was the glue that connected everything together. So if you think about it, every project we do needs identification. Every project, hopefully, we do process and organization change. Every project, we certainly do the application development solution delivery work. But, you know, every project does that. And in many cases, every project makes the same mistakes. And what the oversight role allows you to do is allow both business and IT people to really know their roles in making things happen. So how does that happen? One, investing very transparently, having a business case that is not only believable, but is actually real. And what we found there is if you ask the people putting together the business case, not how many dollars are we going to bring in, because those numbers are a little tough to go around. But if you go back to those indicators that Richard talked about earlier, what are the key indicators that matter? Dollars might be one of them, but it might be some operational business process metrics, whether it's inventory turns or cycle times on a manufacturing process or anything like that. How can we move those? And if you can tie yourself to those operational metrics, it's a much cleaner process to figure out what you're doing and also whether you got it. Then the dollars can come later. So number one is invest really transparently on what is it that you're trying to get so you can then go back and find out whether you got it. And then close the loop, what we call harvesting. Come back not only when the project ends, but 6 months later, a year later, find out did those metrics actually move? Because you're going to get a couple answers. One answer is they moved and everybody's happy and we can learn from how we managed that project. The other is they didn't move, everybody's unhappy, and we can learn how to do better on the next project. The only bad answer is we don't know whether we got the value, because then you don't learn anything from there. So what the virtuous cycle is about is there are 4 tasks, actually the 4 tasks that are most a combination of IT and business together, and they're tied together by this idea of oversight that allows everybody to know their roles and allows everybody to learn throughout the process. We find the firms that get any of these 4 tasks right get higher business value in the eyes of senior executives statistically significantly. And if you get all 4 of these right, you've got that learning cycle that just goes on and on and on. It improves you every time you do a project.
I'll add that the topic of governance came up very early in this conversation. And indeed, the virtuous cycle has a lot of elements in it that many enterprises think of as parts of their governance process. What the virtuous cycle does is put the governance process into a context that explains why it works or is not working.
It all comes back down again to that question of what are the key measures that we're trying to move? Because if we can really get clear on what we're trying to move, what are the key metrics for the company? What are the key measures that we're trying to move with each project? And then did how well we did move those with each project? Then we got the governance process working well. If we don't have those key ideas on what dials are we trying to turn, the governance process becomes much more of a backroom process or a magic process as opposed to something where everybody can see how decisions are being made and how they're getting the value.
I'll just add one more thing, which is that our research tells us that it's tough to make that virtuous cycle work really well until the IT organization has shown that it's an efficient provider of services, that it is providing what we call value for money in the book, which means that the IT organization can demonstrate that it's a competitive supplier of the right services at the right level of quality.
Just to add to what Richard just said, and why does that matter, the value for money? Because value for money is about controlling your own work and showing that you can manage well. And frankly, it's really hard either to tell other executives what to do or to have them listen to you unless you can show that you know what you're doing first. So that value for money is just critical to being able to have more impact in the company later.
As Sam Corson, the CIO at Freescale Semiconductor, said to us, half of what I do is about my own processes. The other half of what I do is about everybody else's processes. And until you get the first half right, this isn't Sam's words, these are mine. Until you get the first half right, it's tough to get the second half right.
Very good point. As a last question, I wanted to ask each of you, as two people that are steeped in technology, as is very apparent through this conversation, to take a moment just to talk about emerging trends in IT that particularly excite you. So speaking outside of the book here, what are some of the things that you've been seeing as you've investigated IT on your own, as you've been speaking with the many contacts that you have, that you find particularly meaningful for the foreseeable future? Maybe Richard, may I start with you?
Okay. I'll name two things. The first is that we are at the very beginning of the most massive accumulation of information that has ever been seen in the world. At this point in time, some analysts estimate that the amount of digitized information on the planet is doubling in size every 18 months. And the base for that doubling is non-trivial. I would suggest that in the 1980s, enterprises struggled to get their hands on relevant information. In the early 21st century, enterprises are struggling to find exactly the right stuff in an ever-growing sea of information. And this will be an important concern for IT organizations going forward, a very important concern, making meaning out of mountains of data. The second thing I'll suggest is that within the next 10 years, we're going to see important impact on enterprises and on society from the cloud. And the meaning of that impact is that the cloud will shift from its current focus on capacity on demand to a focus on capability on demand. And this will have important impacts, among other things, on the software industry. Because why would you buy an ERP system, for example, to automate your supply chain when you can simply buy a supply chain instantly to anywhere you want it to go?
George, same question for you.
A couple trends. One is it gets back to that data question, but there's a tremendous amount of information technology in organizations that are outside the IT organization. So if you think about digitized information flowing from sensors in devices, if you think about information like the manufacturing automation, or like even the fare card machines on the subway. And I think CIOs in managing IT have to have a big decision to make on what's in and out of their scope. It's not a clear answer, and I think it's a decision that each CIO will make with the senior team of the company. But if you start talking about making sense of information, got to think broadly about what that information means. Number two is a change in the thinking of what IT is in companies. I think up till now, the senior executive in companies had actually entered the workforce in a time when there were no computers on their desks. In fact, there may not have been computers they even saw. But we're rapidly hitting a time where middle and senior executives have always lived in a world where computers are part of their companies. And as that happens, it's going to be a different way of using computers. There's going to be an expectation that it's just there and it's working. And IT people, IT managers are going to have to figure out how to be part of that conversation.
Excellent. Well, Richard Hunter, George Westerman, thank you so much for joining us in the forum on World Class IT. The book, again, is Real Business of IT. Again, a wonderful read for any of our listeners who have not already had a chance to read it. Gentlemen, thank you again for joining us today and sharing your insights.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.